The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
This is Mike Consul, one of the editors here at IREI. Our subject is the political and economic situation in Italy, and our guest is Vanessa Mascara. She is Associate Director of Property Research at M&G Real Estate. She joined the property research team at M&G in 2014, focusing on the European property markets. And her responsibilities include the quarterly update of about 90 European property market forecasts, the production of a European fund strategies, report and bespoke research projects and publications. Today, she joins us by phone from London to discuss the political and economic situation in Italy. Vanessa Mascara, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let's talk about this very complicated situation in the center of the former Roman Empire there. Italy's not the empire it used to be, but it's still a formidable economy when things are going right. But the political situation's gotten really messy. I want to talk a little bit about that situation and then the economic ramifications. How would you characterize the political situation right now in Italy? Get us up to date on that.
Well, what's happened since the 6th of March, so the day following the last elections, if I have to be completely honest, I actually have stopped following the headlines. The night before felt a little bit like Brexit all over again. I hardly slept. I'd given in my vote. I fell asleep, and the last notification I got on my mobile was that the Five Star Movement were predicted to win between 30% and 36% of the vote. I thought, oh my God, if I wake up and they've got the majority, then we're in trouble. What actually happened is that they didn't. Even though when I woke up, I saw these sort of headlines that claimed they'd achieved some sort of victory, when really it was just trying to highlight that it's the highest share of votes that they'd ever achieved. But what I'm trying to say is that I haven't been following the headlines ever since, because it's just been a matter of, yes, the Five Star Movement won the highest share of votes, but ever since then, the other parties, the left and the right, have just been playing ping pong. Di Maio, the leader of the Five Star Movement, has been boasted. He's been quoted to say the day after the election, they're all going to have to come to us. The reality is that neither the left or the right really want to form an alliance with them. And so it's been a month since the 6th of March, even more than that. Still no majority alliance. I stopped reading the papers. A month, relatively speaking, if you think that the Germans took 6 months to put an alliance together, it could be a few more months to go before we see a majority being formed. It could be that we go back to elections later this year. Meanwhile, the economy and property markets are marching ahead. Italy is lagging the overall European economy, along with some of the other like markets such as the Benelux markets or some of the Nordic markets like Finland. Italy's a lagger, but it's riding the wave. So the economy is doing well, and so are the property markets. Overall, if anyone finds a direct correlation between Italian politics and the economy, I'll give them money.
Well, let's back up a minute to the Five Star Movement. What I don't know what the Five Star Movement really represents, and I suspect most of our listeners don't either. The Five Star Movement characterize what they believe or what kind of political temperature they're bringing to bear.
I mean, in terms of, people like to put labels on parties, so let's, for the sake of argument, you can call them populist. When I woke up the following morning and had a cup of coffee, I just sort of thought, hang on a minute, what's actually happened is no different to what's happening across the rest of Europe, meaning that we've got to a level of wealth which I think people are just getting tired of voting for the traditional right and the traditional left parties. If you were to ask me exactly, point for point, item for item, what's on the Five Star Movement's campaign, I wouldn't actually know, because partly they sort of invented it along the way. They just wanted to sort of stand out as being different to the centre, to the left or the right. And they were successful. They were very successful campaigners. At the end of the day, a lot of the voting was quite strategic because of the new electoral system which was introduced in this particular election, which is for the first time a third of the seats were assigned by first past the post and two-thirds by proportional representation, which is why some of the results came in 12 hours late, because, you know, it's even hard for them to count them all up. But again, I mean, before the election, I think there was some jitters in the bond markets where bonds went up to 2%, but the day after they rebounded and came back down to 1.7%, which is where they were before. Stock markets didn't actually move. And in fact, the Italian stock market has gained in value since March, and is indeed at at its highest level over the year. If we look at the actual index itself, it's called MIB. It's been broadly unchanged in the past month and is the only major national index across Europe that has actually risen this year. So again, highlighting the fact that there's no direct correlation between the politics and the economy and property markets. They're still doing well.
So it sounds like the political zeitgeist that's been sweeping across really the world has reached Italy. It's hit the United Kingdom, the United States, the Philippines, Italy. This loss of confidence in institutions, the loss of confidence in the traditional political parties to solve problems, has continued to sweep across Europe and the rest of the world. So Italy's been hit by this. And so it's going to be a lot of spaghetti with marinara sauce for a while, if you'll excuse the reference. And here's the thing I want to ask you about, though, Vanessa. You're talking about the stock markets at a high. One of the things we're seeing is that despite the what are really kind of scary political situations in some cases, business seems to continue to march forward. They're almost baking it into the cake and just deciding that we're going to continue to conduct business. The political situation doesn't seem to be affecting business the way it has over the years. In the past, a volatile political situation, I mean, business doesn't like unpredictability. And right now we have a lot of unpredictability, but business seems to just be turning a blind eye to it and saying, let's stick to our knitting.
Absolutely. Business doesn't like uncertainty, but relatively speaking, across Europe, you know, some of the most safe haven markets perhaps are the likes of Germany and UK. But in terms of spaghetti, as you alluded to earlier, I think Italy is very good at it, and somehow it still seems to struggle through. If you think about the entire GDP across the European Union, Italy's the fourth largest economy. So despite the uncertainties, so to speak, it's still a very strong economy. I mean, just to give you an idea, we've had 64 governments since the Second World War. We've had 28 prime ministers in office since World War II, 18 of which have served for less than 2 years. So, you know, what's another government between friends? Meanwhile, absolutely, there's still no correlation between what's happening in government and some of the business indicators. So looking at some of the leading business and economic indicators, starting with the PMI, the composite PMI, but also the economic sentiment indicator, it's at its highest level since the beginning of the noughties, and that's feeding through to some of the GDP forecasts as well. It's the GDP forecasts in Italy are tending to beat analyst expectations. They're published every month. Just to give you an idea, in 2017 alone, back in January, the consensus was forecasting a GDP growth for Italy of 0.7%, and by year-end, it achieved a growth of 1.6%. This year, for 2018, the consensus is building in a forecast of 1.5%, and it could be that if leading economic indicators continue to reach record levels, we could see that revised upwards again. So there's no sign of the two being correlated.
And I should say, I love spaghetti, and I'm full-blood Italian, so anybody who's listening, suffice it to say that it was not an epithet that I use. And I will say, though, that I was disappointed to see that Italy, this was a few years ago, Vanessa, that Italy had the worst performing economy, second worst performing economy in the world, I believe, alongside the only economy that performed worse was some third or fourth world country. Now Italy's got somewhat of a resurgent economy. And what is driving that? Mm-hmm. I mean, what are the traditional industries? You know, there's a lot of design work being done there. There's automotive. What industries are propelling this Italian recovery?
Well, certainly, I hate to describe Europe as a region, one great blob. It's made up of several different economies, all recovering at different rates. The economy has started recovering, the European economy started recovering several years ago, starting with the core economies of, say, France, Germany, and UK. And Italy is quite simply a lagger, along with some of the Benelux markets like Netherlands and Belgium, and so do some of the Nordic markets like Finland. So Italy is just another lagger. It just so happens that it's now producing a positive economic growth, which is feeding through to some of the property markets as well. I guess one thing to say is that in terms of drivers, this economic and property cycle is different to previous ones, and that is very much driven by monetary policy, so quantitative easing, which is feeding through one by one to all the economies. And in terms of the property sector, which is my day-to-day bread and butter, if you like, that's the subject that I can talk about more credibly. It's because of monetary policy that the first real estate sector that recovered first was the retail sector. Why? Because quantitative easing then boosted private consumption, which in turn boosted the retail sector market. So, for example, we saw double-digit rental growth in Milan back in 2015 of over 20%. And now we're seeing some of the offices markets perform really well in Italy. So, for example, because it's a very tight market, and because of the labor markets are recovering. So just in the last quarter alone, the Milan office market generated a rental growth of 4.8%, which is the highest of the 23 office markets we cover. And I'm sure we'll see the next traditional real estate market recover next, which is the industrial market. And in fact, the industrial market is probably the one that is least impacted by some of the political uncertainties because it's going through structural changes, meaning e-commerce. So with online sales being more and more taken up, a larger share of the retail sales in Italy, I will probably see that feeding through to the industrial markets as well.
How about the capital flows into Italy? You know, we talk a lot about the capital flows coming here to the United States, which we benefited from, and clearly Germany, the UK, France have been beneficiaries of a lot of sovereign wealth fund money and other capital flows. Does Italy have much in the way of real estate capital flows at this time from overseas?
I think the share is largely, it's probably more in France. I know it's 50-50. I suspect in Italy it's quite, there's a big domestic market there. But as the property market recovers now, I think we'll see a larger share of foreign investment come in I mean, the big deal a few years ago was the Qataris buying the Porta Nuova development in Milan. That made the big headlines, and we'll probably see more of that now that the tight Milan office market is picking up. But going back to your question, which was investment volumes in Italy, just last year it reached a record volume of 10.8 billion in 2017, which was up 17% year on year. And if you look at the INREV Investor Intention Survey, which is published every year, 156 participants take part, together representing 230 billion of assets under management. They expressed this year that Italy was the sixth most favored European investment destination in 2018. So we'll probably see more yield compression in some of the Italian markets. In fact, we have seen it already in Q1. The Q1 data just came through a few days ago. And while a lot of the European markets have already seen a lot of yield compression, the Italian market is lagging, and the retail shop sector saw a further 10 basis points compression this quarter, and the office market saw a further 20. So, and it's all because of the strong investor sentiment towards the economy.
What other sectors of the Italian real estate market are strong? You mentioned that retail was the first to recover. Industrial is expected to come along. What about hospitality, the hotel market? What about the office market? Are those segments or property types that there was an expectation, or for that matter, the housing market, any of the major food groups within real estate? If you could run through some of the others with us, Vanessa, how are you expecting them to perform?
Gosh, I can't possibly comment on the hospitality market. I can have a go if you sort of consider it a sort of leisure type sector. I mean, M&G is an income-driven, low-risk investment house. We traditionally invest in the traditional sectors, so offices, retail, and industrial. But if you consider, say, hospitality a sort of a retail or leisure type sector, I would say that taking retail shops as an example, even though it's already delivered strong rental growth 2 years ago in Milan, and continues to do so. Why does it continue to do so? Because the tourist arrival projections are above average going forward. I don't project them. I know third-party consultants, I think Euromonitor, has projected tourism flows to increase by 25% by 2020. This is in Milan. So basically, I think some of the major international tourist destinations like Milan and Rome are very much isolated by, you know, the big phenomenon trends like e-commerce and things. I think there'll be external drivers which will continue to drive those markets, which is tourism. Tourism from some of the emerging markets as well, tourism from some of the economies that are recovering there. We'll see net new arrivals in Milan and Rome. I mean, overall, the point is that there's no direct correlation between property economics and, you know, it's business as usual, just because politics has always been uncertain. As I say, we've had 64 governments since the Second World War. What's another one between France? And Italy's just right in the wave of the overall European economic region recovering. And you can see that in some of the property markets as well. Whereas at the beginning of the property recovery, my team recommended to the fund managers to invest in, say, Germany, because it was the first core country, say, the Ivy market, and say, Spain as well, because it was recovering from a really low base level, so generating really double-digit growth there. Now it's all about Italy. It's sort of recovering late. You're seeing yield compression there, and you're seeing some of the rental growth coming through, even in some of the industrial markets. I mean, just last year, rental growth was very patchy at the moment. Everybody's talking about e-commerce, but actually, we've seen rental growth just come through in very select markets, and two of those are Milan and Rome, so in Italy, so it is coming through. And even in terms of the office markets as well, you're seeing very tight markets there. So if you look at the pipeline coming through, expected to come through, while some markets are already starting to be overheated, like Madrid and Dublin, you're seeing pipeline come through. In Milan, the pipeline coming through as a percentage of total stock is less than 1%. So it's all very manageable, and that's why you're seeing rental growth come through, which it has done this quarter. It has this quarter in just 9 markets out of the 23 that we cover, and Milan at 4.5% rental growth just this quarter is the highest among those 9 markets. Again, reiterating the fact that there's no such correlation, in my view, between the economy and politics and economy and property markets.
Our guest has been Vanessa Mascara, Associate Director of Property Research at M&G Real Estate, and we've been talking about the political and economic situation in Italy. Vanessa, thanks a million for taking the time. We don't talk about this part of the world a whole lot. Italy is one of those secondary European markets when you're here in the United States, and this has been enlightening. Thank you for taking the time.
No, thank you, Mike, for the opportunity. It's been a pleasure.